Welcome to Fembolden, episode 3. I'm Stephanie Graff.
I'm Kirsten Pope.
And today we are talking about feminism, sexuality, healthy attitudes towards sexuality. But before we begin, we kind of wanted to make a little caveat here. As most of you know, Kirsten and I were located in Provo, Utah. And so this episode on sexuality and healthy attitudes towards sex is going to have a pretty conservative slant. So all of these opinions, all of these stances are taken from the perspective of respect to abstinence, respect to abstinence before marriage, and kind of working within that conservative realm. So with that being said, with the business being taken care of, we wanted to introduce our special guest star.
Yay.
We have a special guest. So Chad, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Chad Clayton. I'm a student at BYU that's currently taking time off in business. I'm a physics major, and I am somewhat involved with feminist thought, but perhaps I'm a slightly different angle than these women here. So I'm also a member of the Fidelio Society, which I believe is part of why my presence was requested. I don't know if you want me to talk to that at all, but...
Yeah, feel free. Okay. What is that?
Yeah, tell us, tell everyone, and like...
Inform us.
Yeah, how would you describe Fidelios in, like, two sentences?
Two sentences.
I mean, you can obviously expound.
Choose your words wisely.
We'll do two sentences. I'd say the Fidelios Society is a interdisciplinary student group dedicated towards exploring the link between faith and reason. That is to say, we kind of live in a very conservative environment, one that's very religiously influenced, and it's our goal to... kind of investigate and talk through the rational underpinning for a lot of positions that many people in this culture just kind of take for granted. You know, that they might form their position on a social issue based on their value system and not really think through the rational arguments for and against. And it's our opinion that as conservatives, we don't need to yield ground rationally and concede arguments that, you know, under the mistaken impression that we have to just lean back on our, you know, religion or on our values on issues like abortion or gay marriage or other such things, but that there really are substantial rational arguments, and that if there aren't, then we're prepared to change our minds. But in almost every case, we found that there are.
Awesome. And so Chad is here to lend his...
Excellent two sentences.
Yeah, really.
No.
Those are going to be the most cultured two sentences probably in this whole podcast.
Yeah, very, very eloquent.
So he is here representing Fidelio Society. He is here also representing men, if you can tell. So
I represent all men.
He is our token man, representing every male on the earth.
Every voice.
Yes.
50% of the population encapsulated in one person.
In one person. It's quite a person.
Brace yourself.
So to start off, we wanted to talk about a woman called Jennifer Finlayson Fife. So I work for the Humanities College, and Jennifer Fife came in and did a presentation for the college. She's an LDS sex therapist. And so she talked about her... dissertation, some of the stuff that she's found, which we found super interesting and pertinent, not just only in the LDS culture, but for a lot of conservatives, people who kind of have more of a conservative attitude towards sexuality. So in her dissertation, Finlayson Fife, she examined LDS women, their concept of femininity and how they felt like it was tied to their sexuality. So she said, men are constructed as naturally sexual and women are taught to be desirable to those men. She said that women focus on desirability rather than their own desire, creating a non-identification with their self-knowledge of their own desires. And so she has clients, she's a sex therapist, and so people obviously come and see her. And so she talked about how this creates a culture where women, I don't know, self-objectify.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a thing for women to self-objectify, but institutionally that, and I mean, now I'm going into the realm of personal experience. I know growing up, like, learning about sex inside and outside of church, it was very, like, Well, I'll just give you the
don't hold back.
The actual example that was given to me that is just like burned in my memory from a chastity lesson. Luckily, there were no crumpled flowers or licked cupcakes.
Oh goodness.
That still is a thing.
Yeah, I had a cupcake lesson.
But it was a car lesson, and
creative.
I don't know if this is actually based on science. We'll kind of touch on that later. But she said in, like, chastity, modesty, things like that, she said, well, men are like a race car, like a really, really nice car. And it's really easy to, like, turn it on and has, like, an engine and blah, 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 blah. So, like, very sensitive. Whereas women are an old, clunky, run-down.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And women are, you know, it just, it's so hard. This is her words, not mine. But that women are this old, clunky, rundown car, and, like, it's so hard to turn it on, and you have to, like, rev the engine. I mean, that was how I was taught, that women, and I think that's how a lot of women are taught inside and outside religion, is that women are not sexual beings in the way that men are. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have all these problems of consent and things that we've talked about before, that the innate underlying belief that men are more sexual than women, mm-hmm. which I don't really know science, but, like... I don't know. Is that true?
I don't know. Chad, how would you respond to that assertion? That men are inherently sexual and women are inherently not.
Or that maybe not not, but women are inherent... Because women are less sexual, they're the keepers of morality.
Yeah. Or that their role is to be desirable to men. No, in that engine, to use the metaphor.
No, there's a lot of stuff to talk about there. I personally don't think that analogy really holds water. It doesn't really seem to make sense to me. My married friends and other friends who are sexually active tell me that their libido is actually struggles to keep up with their own wives. And
ooh, shocking.
No, but and
how scandalous.
I think that it's inaccurate to say that men are more sexual. I do think it'd be perhaps more useful to say that they are the sexual actors. They are by nature more sexually active.
Mm.
That they are meant to be the kind of they have more of the agent's role. And I can get into that as much as you'd like as far as why I feel that way. But I think a lot of it is social construction. But I also think there's a lot of, you could say, there's a biological basis to it. And yeah.
So yeah. Following your line of thinking, like if men are more the actors, does that insinuate that women are more being acted upon?
Well, this kind of is a change of direction, but I think it'll answer your question. I'm inclined to kind of search out an evolutionary biology sort of explanation. I'm really mm-hmm. persuaded by the idea that having been around for a very long time, that our species, you know, its behaviors aren't just entirely socially constructed, that there's kind of an evolutionary basis for a lot of our behaviors, and sexuality is perhaps the area in which that's most pronounced. So when it comes to males being more active sexually and women not, I think you have to look at, you know, kind of strip away all of our current, you know, society and the support that we have and think about, you know, it may be kind of tired to return to this idea, but think about a caveman and a cavewoman and what their goals are and what actions benefit them and which actions are detrimental. A man as a mammal, as an animal, truly just as a mammal, has this compulsive drive to spread his seed as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why exactly that is the case, but that's just the desire that man has. And it is advantageous for the man to be sexually promiscuous because there's this serious inequality that's just super obvious when it comes to sexual matters that ought not to be disregarded when we're talking about equality. And that is that men can engage in intercourse as much as they want with very little consequence. But mm-hmm. women have to be a lot more careful mm-hmm. because they're the ones that get stuck with a child. They're the ones that have to deal with that. And so there's this inherent inequality, I think, drives these things.
Yeah, that's really important because, I mean, you're saying that men have the biological advantage over women in that state, but women are left with the biological consequence. And so I think that's where
maybe that idea that comes
discrepancy
from,
comes
that men are have more sexual desire. It's that they historically were able to, you know, before these evolutions in like birth control and things, men could be more sexual because they didn't risk any consequence.
Yeah, and because I mean there was very little risk. And women had to be a lot more careful about that. And I think that perspective really informs a lot of facets of this conversation that we can get into.
But I think men do have the moral responsibility because they're the ones inflicting that consequence. I mean, using the most sterile terms.
Inflicted upon me.
I mean, when talking about, like, pregnancy and, mm-hmm. and contraception, like, maybe inflicting isn't the right term, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I think all of this goes really nicely into our next point that kind of Finlayson Fife touched on. She said women are, this culture is kind of equated to this consequence of women being the gatekeepers of sexual relationships. So, and women internalize the desire, the idea that they have no sexual desire, that like, I'm just in charge of controlling, like making sure he doesn't go too far when like, mm-hmm. I mean, in my opinion, like, you're in charge of you. Like,
you can't assume that responsibility on, you have to assume that responsibility for yourself.
Yeah, like, I'm in charge of myself. I'm not in charge of you. But, I mean, Chad, in, like, your opinion and, like, your past experience, like, what's your experience with that from a cultural standpoint here? Do you feel like women are expected to be those like moral mm-hmm. gatekeepers?
No, absolutely. It's a pretty egregious double standard, in my opinion, that women are expected to be, you know, these paragons of virtue, and yet also be sexy at the same time.
Right.
And
there's a huge paradox.
Not be too stale in that way.
Be sexy, but not too sexy.
Right.
Yeah.
Be sexy.
Don't be a prude, but also
don't be a slut.
Exactly.
Be sexy in the way I want you to be sexy.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's. I think again, I'm going to return to this evolutionary point. Because I think that, you know, even though birth control has been around for a few decades, it's going to take longer than that to change these really deeply ingrained patterns of behavior. Mm-hmm. I think that a woman has a kind of a fine line to walk, and that she has an incentive to be promiscuous because she will attract a male. But if she is too promiscuous, then she risks, well, I guess there's two things to say here. She risks attracting the sort of individual and engaging in sexual activity before a relationship has been developed, which increases the chances that the dad will just up and leave. Mm-hmm. And two, because being too promiscuous is going to repel a lot of men, and there's a reason for that, and that's because from a man's perspective, the worst thing that could happen is. Again, I'm talking about a caveman here, so please.
Obviously, no modern man would think this
from,
way.
From right, they, it's all subconscious for them. I'm going to say that most men will have this built in. You could say, but anyway, from the male perspective, the worst case scenario is devoting yourself to a woman, you know, engaging in a sexual relationship, and then supporting another man's child. And so, if a woman is excessively promiscuous, then I think there's this kind of primordial fear that the man will be stuck raising a child that ended up not being his. And so he'd be consecrating his resources and his time towards the raising of a child that wasn't his own. And so what I'm getting at with all this, the main point is that there is this double standard that women have to attract or feel compelled or what, biologically motivated, whatever you want to say, to attract a male. But if they go too far, then the male will not be inclined to stay with her because he still might engage in a relationship with her, and he'll certainly try and procreate with her, but he won't be inclined to stay if he feels like her chances of getting with another man are high.
Okay, so let's, because I think that is like, that's like the umbrella we're working under. But like, so if we were to bring that like to our culture now, we're like. Most people around here are not actually sexually active.
Yeah.
But I think what you were talking about is still very, very pertinent. Mm-hmm. But how does that change when it's like a girl doesn't care as much, like it's not as big a deal for her to make out with a guy who's made out with a lot of girls as it is for a guy to make out with a girl if he's like, oh, like she has made out with a lot of guys. Like why is that a bigger deal if like there really isn't pregnancy, there isn't procreation involved, but like, because, I mean, I think that definitely exists. Like, guys don't get slut-shamed, but if a guy's like, oh, no, she's gotten around, like, mm-hmm. I probably won't date her. So why do you think that translates even here when people aren't having sex?
Yeah, no, you make a valid point in that you couldn't make the direct ties, but I mean, first of all, it's taught, as you said, it's that idea is emphasized strongly in, you know, kind of religious social instruction from young age. I think perhaps there are kind of lies told about the nature of men, that they're rambunctious and they're, you know, out of control and this and that.
Boys will be boys.
Exactly. Mm. Boys will be boys.
I loathed that statement so much.
That is terrible.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And also for women as well. But I do think that it's still tied to that. I really do. I do think that men's aversion to female promiscuity is still tied. And like still tied to the deep sort of evolutionary motivation. And at least that's the only compelling answer I've found to the question. Because, I mean, otherwise, well, what are we going to say? That men are all just immoral, that they're innately immoral, that they're taught to be immoral? Because it seems like kind of a rotten thing to do. But I really think there is a rational basis to it. And as I said, I find that argument more compelling than anything else that I've found, that it's just kind of buried deep in the male psyche. I mean, sorry.
But, I mean, even though if that's empirically true, I feel like that should not be the ideal, is what I would say. That women, especially in the LDS church, we go so far away, we're so scared of people being immoral that we go to the complete opposite, where we tell women to shut it down.
You can't be a sexual being.
Exactly, that you are not a sexual being. You cannot be a sexual being, and you have to do everything in your power to keep men from being sexual beings.
And I think that's
really
bad.
And that's almost as damaging as the other extent, because, I mean, in both situations, being immoral or being too shut down to those emotions, those natural emotions, those natural inclinations, that you lack the power to develop healthy relationships that are outside those bounds that can that can rise above just the simply, well, mortal aspects of sexuality.
And I think even when they're married and they are sexually active, they see sexuality as that's bad.
Right.
And it's like, no, like you're
they've suppressed it for so long.
And it's like they feel like they're not allowed to have that because that's a man's thing. Like men are innately sexual, but like women can't be like...
Yeah, like men are driven by lust and that sort of carnal desire. Was women
and,
certainly
and they're
are
taught
not.
That that's okay that they're that's
men,
okay
yeah,
to
it's
have
okay
that
for men to have
and
that.
For women to have a carnal desire is not okay.
It's slutty. It's
exactly
bad. Which slut shaming is such a horrible thing. Just kind of bringing this more to like the everyday, I think it's super prevalent, and I think. At least for me, from a very young age, the first time I heard the word slut, I was in the 7th grade.
Oh, you poor thing.
So tender
so
and impressionable.
Innocent.
But I remember, like, I heard it once and, like, had to have it, like, explained to me. But then after that, I heard it all the time. Like, in 7th, 8th grade, like, anyone who would kiss anyone, she was a slut. Slut. Mm-hmm. Slut.
Yeah.
But, like, and, like, although, I mean, now in our educated, like, I'm a graduate student. No one's going to throw the word slut around.
You're too highbrow for that.
I'm far too above that. But I think the prevalence of slut shaming is, I mean, it's still such a thing.
So tell me exactly what you mean by that. Define slut shaming for me.
Slut shaming as in, like, I mean, like, if a man goes and, like, let's say a guy kisses a couple people at the same time. Like, I mean, not physically at the same time, but I mean, like... Like, okay, in a week, a guy kisses a couple girls.
Okay.
He's a player. Like, he has game. Like, that's very, like, society very much, like, applauds him for that. He's applauded by that from his peers. Whereas, like...
Do you really think so?
I do.
You think that he'd come home to his roommates and get high fives?
Yeah. No, I do. Whereas, like, for me, like, let's say I kiss a guy and then maybe, like, a week later I kiss someone else. Like, my roommates are going to be like, Steph, that's horrible. Like, not just what you did is horrible, but, like, you as a person.
Right. No,
yeah,
I think you're right about that.
Your standards fall.
Your standards fall. And so I'm gonna read this text on the hope that who sent me this doesn't listen to my podcast.
As soon as you say that, you're jinxing it.
I
like,
know.
You just jinxed it. I hope you know.
There's so many random people that listen to this that, like... I didn't know. Like,
it's gonna find its way back.
Yeah, like
anyway, proceed.
okay, so I got this a while ago. names have been changed to protect the not-so-innocent. Me talking to one of my friends, yeah, telling her I kissed a boy. I thought we had the same opinion on kissing escapades, or did you actually feel like something would happen? You deserve the best, and you could have someone so amazing. Do you believe that? I know you might not want to hear this, but I have to say this because I'm not sure anyone else will. One day, you'll be lucky enough to be in a charitable, caring relationship like me, and the way you're living right now won't get you there. I mean, not that I kiss a whole ton of boys, but do I feel like if I was a guy and I sent that, like, told my friend that I kissed a girl, like, I wouldn't have gotten that response.
I don't know. Speak on behalf of all men, since...
Yeah, speak up for the 50%.
Yeah. Right.
Is that reality, or is that our perceived reality as feminists who...
Well,
seek to be offended all the time.
First of all, what I'll say is I think that, generally speaking, what that individual said in the text has truth to it. Mm-hmm. That there's a certain way of conducting yourself that is not inherently bad, I'd never say that, but is less likely to lead to a committed, as she said, you know, charitable relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of connecting to what I said earlier, and that, you know, no man is going to turn down the opportunity to, you know, in the LDS context, making out is essentially, you know...
Yeah, translate it for us.
Going all the way. few men are going to pass that up. But quickly reaching that point with someone, I would say, would lessen your chance that they are... You know, reaching that point with the man, rather, would lessen the chance that they would want to stay
mm-hmm.
in a real, meaningful, committed way.
But what if I don't want him to? I know that sounds... But in this context, like... She was operating under the assumption that I wanted him to commit to me, and I didn't.
Right. No, and that's totally fine. Like, shaming someone and kind of implying that what they did was morally wrong, I think, is completely out of line. I think that's completely mm-hmm. wrong. All I'm for is girls being educated in truth, and girls knowing mm-hmm. what I just said and believing it, rather than mistakenly thinking that, oh, if I just, like, you know, get this guy sexually excited, then he'll... You know, he'll be a loyal boyfriend and he'll love me and he'll do all these romantic things. And that's simply not the case.
Mm-hmm. But do you think her actions would have been received differently if she was a man?
If she said, I kissed two girls. Yes, I do.
It was only one guy that I kissed. I just needed to have that
so
on
all,
record.
So all five. So five of them in a
week,
right?
No. I was telling
you
her I kissed
qualify
one boy.
Your own slut shaming.
I'm literally slut shaming myself right now. I'm so socialized.
Oh my gosh, you're giving in to the social construct.
I mean, this is...
Practice
this is,
what you preach.
This is purely just, for the record, just to be honest, I just need everyone to know that in this situation, it was just one guy.
Oh, my gosh. We still respect you. You're a valuable
contributor. Just full disclosure. We want to...
Thank you for still seeing me as an intelligent woman who has a complex and multifaceted personality.
Yeah. Okay. I'll validate you more
afterwards.
Yeah.
No, so anyway. I won't try and defend that or say, oh, well, it's good because of this, but I'll speak to why I think it happens and where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that men are kind of the sexual actors, that they're the ones that both kind of in an evolutionary sense and also within, like, kind of a, you know, our modern social context with dating, they are the actors. They are the ones who, you know, ask girls out. They're the ones for whom it is kind of, they're the ones putting out the effort. They're the ones going the distance in the sense that, you know, they identify someone they're interested in, you know, go out of their comfort zone to... go on a date with them or to talk to them, whatever, spend money, you know, there's more of a goal in sight. There's kind of a, you know, an achievement to be made, and they're the ones setting out to do that. And so when a man is, you know, kisses a girl, it's like, in a way, it's like success in his endeavor that he's embarked on.
Right. No, that's a good point.
Whereas I don't think it's perceived the same way with dating with girls, unless, you know, it could go the other way. Say a girl... was surrounded by super attractive men, and she said, oh, that one's the most attractive, I'm going to go for that one. And then she took him out, and then she kissed him and stuff. I don't think that in that context that she would be treated the way that you were in that text.
Mm.
I think it's just because the frame is that men are the pursuers, and though that may not be the ultimate goal, that is kind of a milestone. And when they hit it, it's like, good job, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the women, it's like, I don't know, I guess from other women...
Like, how did you let that happen to you?
Yeah, like, oh, you gave it up too easily.
Yeah.
That it's, like, something...
You gave up the prize.
Yeah, which, again, going back to what we said of, like, women are the gatekeepers in these relationships.
Right.
Like, you get a hold of this, and, like, you give it out. And, again, things that I was told when I was younger, give it out very carefully. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but boys aren't taught that. Boys aren't taught
right.
You only kiss a few girls. people will think you're cheap. Don't go kissing everyone. Protect what you have and give it out sparingly. I mean, were you ever told that as a kid?
No. No, I wasn't.
Well, there's that.
I was taught, go on lots of dates, you know, kiss lots of girls.
Well, yeah. Kiss lots of girls, attaboy.
I think that's really important because we have kind of taken this out of context slightly, out of the courting, dating context.
That's true.
And you're right that men are the initiators. And they're, I mean, I have a stake president who's all about go on a date every day, and I resent that very much.
I know exactly which one you're talking
about. Yeah. But that's, you're right. Like, that's, you are taught, you are the initiator. And so it seems natural that you would be the initiator with, as things go further down the line. So I think as a feminist, the response to that is if I want to be seen as an equal sexual being, I have to be willing to put forth the effort equally. And mm-hmm. I can't expect an unequal initiation and also be seen as an equal partner in the sexuality aspect.
No, certainly. Really, I mean, there's going to be a pursuer and there's going to be a pursued in the current model.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to even that out by trying to kind of change the dating culture up so it's not just predominantly men asking out women and women just parading around trying to get asked out, then I think you'll see a change. I think that rather than saying, oh, slut-shaming is bad, what you're doing is slut-shaming, stop that. Like, rather than saying that, trying to kind of proactively affect a change in the whole dynamic would be a lot more productive.
Right, by viewing myself as a woman as an agent now.
Not something to be acted upon.
Exactly.
In any context, not just physical context of dating and courtship.
Yeah, this is juicy.
No, I think that's a really good, and just wrapping up because we're almost out of time, I think that's a really good place to kind of start wrapping things up. I guess just concluding thoughts. I feel like what we've come to is that femininity and eroticism are not incompatible, or femininity and physicality are not incompatible. But that also women aren't completely victims.
Yeah. They're not incompatible by default in our current model, as we just discussed.
Mm-hmm. Chad, we love having men on here.
Yeah.
We should do this more often.
We should.
You've definitely opened our minds.
Yeah.
To truth.
No, it's something I've been thinking a lot about lately and talking about. One little piece of insight, if I may.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I've been discussing this sort of stuff with my girlfriend quite a lot, actually, because I found that I was having difficulty kind of handling the depth and extent of her own romantic history and how many guys she had been with and you know, this and that. She didn't have any problem with mine, and it actually caused a great deal of friction. So I've been trying to kind of think through it. But I think that it's not something conscious. It's something men have been trained to do, and you know, it's just something that's inherent. You know, this sort of
socially constructed,
deep-seated fear that they will be cheated on, that they'll be stuck in a position they want to be in, and that if we think about it that way, it's not that people are inherently bad. It's just that we have a lot of innate fears that drive the way we do things, and especially drive the things we do that are unfair and that are hurtful and whatnot. They come from a place of weakness and fear, and that ought to be addressed as well.
We're all vulnerable.
We're all vulnerable beings.
So vulnerable.
So vulnerable beings. And that's, I mean, I think we could just get into we could have a whole episode, and maybe we will, on specific issues that affect men. If you haven't already seen it, go watch The Mask You Live In. Mm-hmm. Shameless plug.
10 out of 10 recommend.
10 out of 10 would recommend. So that's it for this week's podcast. Just a preview for next week. We are going to be having another special guest come on.
Yay.
Our theme is going to be on body image. Not necessarily weight, although we will touch on that, but just kind of how women's bodies in a variety of forms are just...
How it's tied to your femininity.
Anemone. Anemone. And tied to just generally your identity.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
Should be juicy. Stay tuned. Chad, thank you again for coming on our podcast
today. Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. This is Ben Bolden.